AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson here on a Tuesday afternoon as we're joined for our usual Tuesday visit with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. For the latest in Minnesota politics and news, make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com and support them, as we'll be talking through a couple of stories today that have been in the Minnesota political news landscape. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always good to be here.
All right, so let's start off with this controversy that has enveloped the DFL over the past week or so, and that has to do with something Ricardo Lopez broke last week, and that is this DFL staffer by the name of Cynthia Calais, who now works for the Teachers Union and is no longer employed by the Senate DFL, as she said she left her Senate job in January after attempting to find a remedy to what she called repeated sexual harassment by Clay Schwartzwalter, who is the half-brother of State Senator Jason Isaacson, who is a DFLer from Shoreview. He's also the former campaign manager back in 2020 of Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. And what Calais says is that basically her accusations of sexual harassment against Clay Schwartzwalter were, they didn't necessarily receive the level of treatment she would have liked to have seen from the Senate, which really contrasts with the way that the House dealt with a complaint against Schwartzwalter. If you can fill us in a little bit more on what happened, Patrick.
Yeah, a few things pop out about this story about the management of an employee's sexual harassment complaint. The first is that it's almost hard to believe that this kind of thing would happen only 4 years after the Me Too movement started, and it cost two legislators their jobs. If you remember, in 2017, we had two resignations, one the Senate, a DFL senator, and a Republican House member who left after allegations of sexual harassment. So in this case, you have a kind of a junior operative, Mr. Schwartzwalter, who's accused of sexually harassing Cynthia Calais. And it continues over two separate jobs. And what's even more awkward about the whole thing is that Schwartzwalter is the half-brother of her boss, Jason Isaacson. I should note that Schwartzwalter has said that the allegations have been mischaracterized, or in some cases they're grossly untrue. His half-brother, Senator Isaacson, says he can't comment because of Senate HR rule, personnel rules. The Senate Minority Leader, Susan Kent of Woodbury, who only recently ascended to leadership, taking down longtime leader Tom Bach, she's defended her handling of the situation. But it certainly doesn't look great when you have this guy in two separate roles, allegations of sexual harassment. He was forced to resign from the campaign. He goes back to work at the House, and another person makes allegations of sexual harassment. We don't know exactly why he was fired, but he acknowledges that he was dismissed from there as well. And then even after all this, Cynthia Calais, the younger staff person who talked to us, she now goes back to work for the first Senator Isaacson, and you can imagine how awkward that might be when Isaacson's half brother is alleged to have harassed her. She asks for some kind of mediation with her boss, and John Pollard, the Senate Democratic chief of staff, is apparently close to Isaacson. Not only that, but he also rented a room to Schwartzwalter during the campaign season previously. So it's a really bad look there. And Pollard tells Cynthia Calais, well, sorry, it's not really our job to mediate some discussion with your boss, Senator Isaacson. It's somewhat understandable because the senator has an election certificate. They're kind of their own boss. It's not like the DFL chief of staff is Jason Isaacson's boss. It's not really how it works. But on the other hand, given Me Too and given this new era, it seems like a reasonable request that Calais made, and one that they ought to at least try to have met. She was frustrated and started looking for another job and left. And so I don't think that's the outcome that she wanted, and certainly a lot of DFL senators are now frustrated with how the whole situation was handled by leadership. And so that's kind of where we are right now in the story.
And make sure you go and read that piece from Ricardo Lopez in the Minnesota Reformer. There is a lot of details to the story, so make sure you check that out over at minnesotareformer.com. But in terms of the latest developments with what's happening in the situation right now, we do have, I believe, over 30 House DFL staffers that are showing solidarity as late Friday. A number of them, as well as State Senator Carrie Jezik of Minneapolis, joined by Melissa Franzen of Edina, Lindsey Port of Burnsville, Aaron Murphy of St. Paul. They all joined in calling for an investigation. So, yeah, this is not a good situation, I would think, for Susan Kent, being a newly elected Senate Minority Leader, at least relatively newly elected Senate Minority Leader, as well as for State Senator Jason Isaacson, with now we have other DFLers saying, no, we really do need an investigation into what happened.
Right. And you may not believe it, that in politics we have some opportunism going on, but it certainly looks a little like Senator Melissa Franzen maybe sees an opportunity here, that if this whole scandal should cost Minority Leader Kent her job, someone would have to step in. But of course, I would never never say that it was opportunism. Senator Franzen, that I'm sure is... I'm sure, actually, and I mean this sincerely, is concerned about how staff are treated and about creating a safe workplace in the Senate. But definitely, there's a lot of consternation in that caucus right now. They're going to meet tomorrow, and we'll have to see what comes of it.
As of now, have we heard any possible moves in terms of a change of leadership at the Senate DFL, or are we still waiting for more facts to play out or more word from the DFL in terms of what could happen if Susan Kent were to possibly lose that position as Senate Minority Leader?
Yeah, I think we're kind of waiting on Ricardo to work his reporting magic on that. I think I think the discussions are being had, mm-hmm. and the time to do it would be now, because you're really going into the important season of raising money and recruiting candidates. And you really want to be the top of your game as you start to go into this 2022 cycle.
Let's move on to another piece that's in the Minnesota Reformer today, Patrick. Again, minnesotareformer.com. And this is an op-ed written by Tyler Blackman, who is a law student at the University of Minnesota, as he wrote an opinion piece titled, "For the U of M, It's Time to Mandate the Vaccine." As he talks about, which I find kind of interesting, is that when he applied to the U of M, they're requiring vaccinations for things like tetanus, measles, mumps, and rubella, but no COVID-19. And he brings up that other private colleges and even some large businesses and government agencies are requiring vaccinations. So I think it brings up a fair point right here that there is probably going to be more pressure put on the University of Minnesota and other colleges around the state to mandate a vaccine.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a little bit of a shift with this fourth wave and the Delta variant. First of all, we've seen a sharp increase in the last week in the number of people getting vaccinated. I also have a sense, just from talking to a couple politicos, they're far less concerned about backlash against the vaccine mandates than they were a few months ago, when it was sort of a key Republican talking point that there could be no mandates. And one reason is because you can say, okay, we're going to have vaccine mandates, but that means we don't have to have mask mandates. And I think a lot of the public likes that idea. But from a substantive standpoint, it is hard to understand why the U wouldn't. A lot of universities, as he noted, a lot of colleges and universities have instituted these mandates, and it's hard to understand why they wouldn't do so at the U.
All right, a final piece I want to talk to you about today, Patrick, has to do with what Rylan Eichens reports today as Minnesota's economic recovery in 8 charts. That's what Rylan wrote about. And, well, being that we are radio and not TV, we can't show you those 8 charts. So we'll just go through some of the highlights from the piece. And I want to start off with at least the general consensus, which seems to be that we are slowly starting to return to normal, but maybe not as quickly as we would like, according to a number of economists. And I think a big part that has to do with the Delta variant here in Minnesota and, of course, around the country, why the anticipated recovery has been going a little bit slower than we would probably like.
Yeah, and this is not surprising that we would have kind of a strange recovery, given that it was a strange recession. It was so sudden and so sharp, there's kind of all these new challenges about, like, supply bottlenecks and so forth, that the recovery, I think, is going to be just very little unpredictable, sometimes a little slow, and we're going to have to take kind of a wait and see approach. We have recovered a lot of the jobs, not all of them. Our unemployment back down quite a bit, but there's the usual problems that we have with recessions, and that is that people of color, and especially Black Minnesotans, are way off, unfortunately, too often the last to get hired, first to get fired, and then they're the last to get hired again once a recovery starts. So we're seeing that again, and so that's something that policymakers probably need to focus on.
Yeah, and the other thing is you talked about how for people of color, unfortunately, the recovery has not been going as smoothly as it has for people who are white. The other part I wanted to talk about is that Minnesota's labor participation rate fell to 67.8% back in April of 2020, which was the lowest we've seen in 30 years. Now, we're back up to about 68% right now, but concerns definitely still persist for child care and COVID safety. And I'm glad that this was brought up, because those are two things that I think are often not talked about when we see signs put up at businesses saying nobody wants to work, we can't hire anybody. I think a lot of people still are very concerned about, well, COVID safety and making sure they're staying safe. And of course, if you have kids, being able to find child care. So that jumped out at me as well as I was reading through the piece today.
Right. Women have also been hit very hard in this recession, and part of the reason is the inability to get childcare and school cancellations and so forth. That has definitely hurt our overall labor participation rate, which traditionally has been one of the best in the country and remains so. It's definitely fallen, as you noted, and we're going to have to see where that goes.
Well, you can check out that piece over at MinnesotaReformer.com, as well as lots of other great news around the world of Minnesota news and politics. Again, MinnesotaReformer.com. That is Patrick Houlihan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, as he joins us every Tuesday. Patrick, thanks so much for the time today. Do appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thanks.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.